This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. Some might have heard of wicked music people. I know that the adjective wicked modifies either music or music people, making the group that is performing this Friday at Yellow Brick Road musicians to skirt around. But if you know that they practice and will be performing in Wicked Pancake Parlor, you'll forgive the adjective. Maybe you even applaud the name of a group that plays period instruments, or at least come as close as possible to the instrumentation of the classical music they perform. And I'm speaking with Yuen Ng, Hai Lin Lee, and Ibi Aziz. Hai Lin plays the violin, baroque violin, Yuen and Ibi Aziz, viola di gamba. How many different kinds of instruments are you playing in this historically informed performance?
Five or six different instruments. We've got two baroque violins, two violas, double bass, a harp, and a harpsichord, which is actually an electric keyboard. We don't have the money for the harpsichord yet. But the majority of the instruments will be strung with gut strings, which is very much part of period performance, including the viola and the double bass. And, of course, the harp is entirely strung from gut.
Baroque music is played only with these instruments?
The Baroque period, I mean, we're really talking about a couple of hundred years, 200 years. And if you include the Renaissance as well, it's even longer. And we have percussion, we have wind instruments and brass as well. But they're all specialist instruments, and they're not very common in Malaysia, not very common around the world either. So we are moving slowly. We only have strings at the moment.
When you mentioned that this is a concert of period music and you are using period musical instruments, what does it mean? I assume these are not instruments from antiquity that you have somehow dug them out from museums or from the earth.
No, they're reproductions of instruments that are in museums and might very well be buried somewhere in an attic somewhere. I play the viola da gamba, which is a seven-stringed instrument, and it looks roughly like a cello, or a cross between a cello and a double bass. It was very common in the Baroque and the Renaissance periods, but it died out in around the time of the French Revolution. Lin plays the Baroque violin. It's a violin, looks like a violin, but it's constructed differently. It's got a straight neck, very much lower tension, and requires a very different technique to play.
With Baroque bows as well, I think. Yeah, different type of bows as well, which are generally shorter than the modern bow, and with bigger arch, higher tension as well. Yeah, and your instrument, Yuen, I think you can mention that is the only one in Malaysia at the moment.
Not right now.
Right, not now,
right there, now.
Right
now,
well,
there are two. Because there's one belonging to him as well, belonging to Ibi. Ibi comes to us from... Ibi's from Malaysia, but he's lived in the UK for many, many, many years. And he teaches the viola da gamba. And in fact, he's a viola da gamba star in the UK. He's recently released a CD with Dame Emma Kirkby, which is doing very, very well, I believe.
You said that the viola di gamba disappeared for a while.
Yes.
When did it start making its reappearance and therefore has become a part of the instrumentation that's used in pieces that might not be Baroque?
I think the revival started in the early 1900s with, what's his name?
Arnold Dolmetsch.
Arnold Dolmetsch, that's right, amongst others. Do you want to tell the story?
The early music revival began roughly at the beginning of the 20th century, the end of the 19th century, and when people discovered that the instruments they were using to play old music from the Baroque period or from the Renaissance period weren't the right instruments. It's during that period they decided to revive all these unusual ancient instruments, which include the viola da gamba. So roughly from around that period, although recent research has shown that the viola da gamba didn't actually completely die out. You know, there was always at least one professional player in Europe that played viola da gamba between the end of the 18th century and the beginning of the 20th century.
But was it an instrument from the Baroque period, the viola da gamba?
Yeah, it was used a lot in the Baroque period, but the golden age was during the 17th century. It began life during the Renaissance, and so it was used in 16th century music. Its golden period was slightly after that. It was used a lot in the Baroque period, but then at the end of that period, towards the end of the 18th century, it began to die out.
During the Baroque period, how big were such orchestras? In your group, you have nine of you. Would that be the size of a Baroque chamber orchestra?
Yeah, that's the reason why the viola da gamba died out, because orchestras were getting larger. And the viola da gamba essentially is not a loud instrument. It doesn't have the projection quality of the cello. So when orchestras got bigger and concert venues opened, and it needed to fill in a lot of people. Those who were sitting right at the back of the hall found that they couldn't hear the gamba, but they could hear other instruments. And so that's a reason why it wasn't used in the orchestras.
In this recital that you are performing, you are playing pieces that are all from the Baroque period.
The original pieces are from the Baroque period, from the entire spectrum, from the early Baroque to the late Baroque. However, in each case, we have modified or added or improvised our own lines to make it slightly more immediate to the present, while being true to the spirit of the music. In the Baroque period, there was a great deal of improvisation going on, especially in the early part with the Renaissance as well. And you very often just get two lines of music and eight instruments. The other six instruments make their own parts. So that's something like what we're doing. But there is something special as well. We have a Malay song called Angin Berdingin, and it was written in the late 1700s by an East India trader called Captain Thomas Forrest. He got the tune from Arcangelo Corelli, a very famous Italian composer, but he was operating very much in this region, especially in Aceh. And for the court of Aceh, he wrote this song. We assume it was in the court of Aceh. And possibly a number of other works where he sets lyrics of his own invention in Malay to an original song written by somebody else in Europe. And we have the good fortune of unearthing this particular piece through a friend at the Islamic Arts Museum who found a mention of it in a study. And the fellow who did the study is called David Irving, who happens to be a friend of EB's. So I mentioned it on Facebook, and David Irving gets in touch with me and says, I've actually got the score. Do you want the score? Here it is. So we ended up with the score, and that's why we're playing it.
I assume this must be the very first time it's been performed in Malaysia.
We actually did perform it earlier this year as an encore, and we didn't intend for it to be sung, but Chiho, who is a baritone with us today, he was in the audience at the time, so he just got up and he sang it on the spot. Mm-hmm. And that's when we thought, you know, we should do this properly.
Sight reading.
Yeah.
And the lyrics are in Malay?
Yes, entirely in Malay. It's a lament, a lover's lament. Where has my love gone? I'm still waiting. While the weather has grown cold, the rain has come, but where are you? I'm still waiting.
What are the other pieces?
Well, we've got a variety of them. There's an interesting one to mention would be the one by Marais, the
Sonnerie de Saint-Geneviève du Mont de Paris.
Basically, the
bells of the church of Saint-Geneviève on the Mount of Paris. Written originally for viola da gamba and basso continuo and violin.
And violin, yeah. So Marais writes specifically for the viola da gamba a lot, I think, and it's interesting because originally it was just for the violin and viola da gamba, and what we've done is we've basically just not torn it apart, but basically expanded it for seven instruments with the harp and the double bass and two violins in interchanging with the melody and the two gambas as well and two violas. So yeah, that one we brought back, we rewrote it ourselves, and we're presenting it in a very different way that it's normally played.
We have another piece which is quite interesting called When Night Her Purple Veil The authorship is disputed. It may be Henry Purcell, or it may be his cousin or brother Daniel. It's a secular cantata, and it was reconstructed by Benjamin Britten, 20th century English composer. What we've done is we've taken Britten's reconstruction and then reconstructed that to make it a little bit more Baroque, what we imagine would be closer to the original performance. We're also playing Schlummert Ein by Johann Sebastian Bach from his cantata Ich habe genug.
The Marula, that's an interesting one.
A Chaconne by Tarquinio Merula, and it's very early Baroque, from the Italian Venetian period.
We had a bit of fun with that because, with that one, we wrote our own solo parts. So usually there's no viola involved, I think, for that. And what we've done is to jazz it up a bit, literally, and write a violin solo and a viola solo, two violin solos and two viola solos in the middle. So in a way, the structure is very similar to jazz. You know, there's improvisation involved.
Eight-bar
improvisation involved before everyone else comes back. That's one of the exciting things about Baroque music. You can actually do that.
In fact, often I hear people say that when they're talking about Baroque music, that
was what jazz is today.
In jazz today, you get a lead sheet. And in the lead sheet, you have the melody, and then you've got the chord symbols on top. In the Baroque, it's the other way around. You get the bass line, and you've got the chord symbols, what are effectively the chord symbols on top, which are in numbers. So you improvise the top part, whereas in jazz, you now improvise the bottom part. You can read the walking bass line from the lead sheet. So it's very, very similar structurally in that sense. And a lot of the time, the chord progressions are very similar as well, 2-5-1s, etc. Of course, there was one more piece that we're doing, which is EB is going to play. It's Georg Telemann's Viola da Gamba suite. And it's Telemannia.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking about what you were just saying, jazz and improvisation being an important element of Baroque music. Well, another very important aspect of Baroque music is dance, and dances are usually put together into a collection that composers refer to as suites. And one of the pieces that we're going to be doing is a suite by Telemann, written unusually for viola da gamba and orchestra. I mean, we were talking earlier about one of the reasons why the gamba fell out of use, because it couldn't compete. But this piece showed Telemann's way of showing off the viola da gamba alongside an orchestra. And he's decided to compile a number of different dances from the period. It's actually called an overture, but inside the overture there are different sections which are essentially dances.
Wherever those chamber orchestras played, were they smaller spaces?
Yeah, they were a member of the aristocracy, a nobility, or the king. You would be wealthy enough to have a group of musicians to perform in, say, a big room of your house. Those rooms are not like the Dewan Philharmonic Orchestra, and it wouldn't make sense. So this surrounding in where we are here now, it's a pancake parlour, is a usual size for a music room in the 18th century in one of the big houses in Europe. So in a sense, we're being rather authentic, aren't we?
Yeah.
In this setting, quite intimate setting.
I'm speaking with musicians from the Wicked Music People who are undertaking a historically informed performance this Friday titled Convergence. So far, we've talked about what such a performance means. Coming up, what do the musicians themselves learn from performing with period instruments? This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
In terms of the sound world, I think for people who've heard later music or classical music or indeed Baroque music played on modern instruments, and when they hear the music played on historical instruments, I think, well, for me, the thing that struck me when I began to notice the difference is how transparent and how light the sound is on the historical instruments and how much more sustained and thick and rich.
Good afternoon. You're tuned to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. In an upstairs parlor, a fancy name for the upstairs of a restaurant, Yellow Brick Road, this Wicked Pancake Parlor is the rehearsal and performance space of Wicked Music People, who this Friday will be offering a historically informed performance of Baroque music. When we say historically informed performance, would this qualify as a historically informed performance?
Well, we try our best, but in the end, unless you have a time machine, you don't actually know how they went about it and how it all sounded like. You know, we have quite a lot of evidence from books from the time. We have a lot of pictorial evidence, so we put those two together. And also, more importantly, we have surviving instruments. Putting all those together, we get a pretty good idea of how this music was played, which is what we're trying to achieve today.
One thing that I've noticed, for instance, the instrument that you play looks like a cello, but the way you bow it is so different. I would assume it was not an intuitive change of how you held the bow.
Yes, well, that's the bow hold of the viola da gamba, which we know because it was described in music books at the time, in treatises from the time, that the bow is held underhand, contrary to how a violin or a cello bow hold is held, which is overhand. And we see this in paintings as well. Where it originated from, we don't really know. I think there were a group of musicians way back at the end of the 15th century, beginning of the 16th century, who decided to play a bowed string instrument, one with the hand, with the palm of the hand facing upwards, and the other facing the other way, and therefore we get this these two different bow holes. Now, for those of you who don't know the bow hole that I'm talking about, it's the same bow hole as the Chinese erhu, and you see a lot of this bow hole, strangely enough, in other ethnic instruments such as the sarangi player. They all hold the bow the same way as the gambo bow hold. I think it's a more natural way to hold the bow than the violin bow hold. But that's just me.
I'm going to ask a stupid question. How would the sound change depending on your bow hold?
The articulation is very different. You can't use certain articulations that are very common in the cello, like spiccato, when you bounce the bow off the bow. You can do it.
You can do it, but it's very difficult.
It's very, very difficult.
Because you're more drawn into the instrument. You're more glued to the instrument. Whereas the overhand instrument, it's basically like you're picking up a stick and you're applying it on the instrument, which means that you can take the bow off and on, put it back on the instrument more easily.
The violin hold allows for greater articulation.
Well, it's different in a way that, you know, the violin bow is shorter and it's a higher tension as well. So basically the balance point is a lot higher up. So if you look at the bow grip of a Baroque bow as opposed to a modern bow, we'd be holding it further up, almost even quarter way through the stick sometimes, depending on where the balance point is. That's pretty much the difference.
Now, Hailin, you play the Baroque violin. Now, how is that different? You have mentioned some things about the neck and also the gut strings. Technically, how do you have to bow it differently?
I think stylistically, it's very different. Like the music itself is very different. There's a lot of articulations in Baroque music that are very important. For instance, with the long notes, there's something called the mezzo di voce, which you have to swell the note and in the middle. That can be done so much more effectively with the Baroque bow compared to the modern bow. And even with the short notes, how it's, you know, articulated with the Baroque bow, it's a lot lighter as well. And so that sort of helps us develop the style, the right style that was, you know, supposedly how this music was played.
It basically boils down to you need the right equipment to get the right style,
right sound.
The right sound, isn't it? I mean, if you want to make a great cup of coffee, you need the right ingredients.
Yeah.
I mean, you can use ordinary coffee, but the
pour over would be different to an espresso.
Exactly, and the result won't be the same.
as usual, going back to food again.
Another important point is the use of vibrato. Mm. In modern violins, vibrato is a basic factor of sound production. You use vibrato all the time.
Yeah.
In Baroque music, you don't. It's an ornament. You use it very, very sparingly. Mm. And that's why you develop things like mezzo de voce and ornaments, etc.
To be honest, that was a challenge, you know, for a lot of us, for a lot of wicked music people. We were trained in the modern way. And many of us, like Kenneth, myself, we only started experimenting with Baroque music a bit more than a year ago. And we were so used to vibratoing to express, you know, the music, the passion and the depth of the music. And we were thinking, how can we do that without the element? And that was quite difficult. But, you know, once you get it and the simplicity of it, the purity of the note and how it can be expressed in a way without having to basically vibrate the note. It's a whole different style that's very, very interesting and very pure to the music, I would say. Yeah.
I assume that there are very few people who understand these instruments as well as you who are playing this music. I also assume that people might have heard of the pieces that you have played, but they've been played on contemporary classical instruments. How will your music sound differently because you're using instruments and instrumentation that's, at least you're trying to approximate the historical period?
Personally, I think it's a lot more delicate. The sound is a lot more delicate. It's warmer. With the gambas, there are many overtones and harmonics that you hear just from playing one note, which you'll never get in cello. Likewise for the Baroque violin, it rings. It really rings through. In the early part of the historically informed performance movement, it all sounded very cold, but I think as time has gone on, people have researched much more, and they learn a lot more about expressing passion through music. We now know that in the Baroque period especially, passions were a great thing, or a big thing in music theory, so we do express that as well. Personally, I find the music very much more passionate, although it might be counterintuitive to think that compared to, say, music from the Romantic period.
In terms of the sound world, I think for people who've heard later music, or classical music, or indeed Baroque music played on modern instruments, and when they hear the music played on historical instruments, I think, well, for me, the thing that struck me when I began to hear, notice the difference is how transparent and how light the sound is on the historical instruments, and how much more sustained and thick and rich the sound is with modern instruments. It's just sort of a different sound world, and I'm not saying that one is better than the other, although the transparent sound using the historical instruments is probably closer to the sound that the composers would have known when they composed the music, and when they were composing it, they were probably thinking of these sounds rather than the latter, more romanticized sounds that we are used to.
As musicians, playing this music, being informed historically, how does that change your approach to playing these pieces as opposed to when you played it earlier? But I assume you've always played the gamba, and therefore the music you played, you hear it through that instrument.
I started on the violin, actually. I started a normal classical training.
I think it's very rare that you would start with Baroque music. Most historical performers would start out as modern players going backwards rather than starting backwards going, which would be an interesting thing. For me, it's taught me the importance of learning to trust what you see, what the composers wrote on the page, as opposed to what you've been hearing being played on recordings or what's been taught to you. It's taught me to look back at the sources and question, is this really what the composer wanted? Rather than, say, a great conductor wanted. That's a different thing. That's someone else's interpretation of what the composer actually intended.
Or even editors, because very often we get scores that have been edited by somebody else and get phase marks and dynamics in there, which didn't actually exist. So we often go back to the actual manuscript in order to determine what the composer meant.
It makes a difference, because you get the real thing.
Which is better.
Why convergence? What is converging?
Well, the two worlds, the old and the new. We have original pieces from as early as the late 1600s.
And we have wicked music people's music.
Yes. Creating things. We exist in the 21st century, and historically informed performance practice is a very modernist thing. It's a very modernist perspective, and we've brought that into the interpretation of early music. So it's two worlds colliding, and we believe very strongly creating something very beautiful.
Also, in terms of the instrumentation, you know, we've got modern violas strung with gut strings, and which
hush.
Yeah, and I think there's a certain, you know, uniqueness to that. It might not be purely historically authentic, you know, in all its words, but it's a sound that is, I think, we create within ourselves, and it's pure and it's true to where we are at this point of time.
It's a historically informed reimagining.
Well, something like that, yes.
Convergence is a recital of period music using period instruments and instrumentation. It happens this Friday at 8 p.m. The performance by Wicked Music People will take place at Wicked Pancake Parlor upstairs of Yellow Brick Road on Jalan Batai in Damansara Heights. And tickets are only priced at 30 ringgit. For reservations, email wickedmusicpeople@gmail.com or WhatsApp 012-406-8211. This is Front Row in the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9. And thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.